Now, it's Thursday Finance with Stephen Pritchard, Certified Practicing Accountant and Financial Advisor.
And today, Stephen Pritchard, we're going to take a look at estate planning. That's sort of something we do need to think about, isn't it, ahead of time?
Yeah, we're going to talk about some estate planning. And
yep. How's gold travelling? Is it up there?
Gold was down $12.16 an ounce to $2,011.08 on the week. The copper price was up $40.75 a tonne to $8,557.98. And the oil price was down $4.76 to $90.69 a barrel.
So lots of red.
Lots of red all over the place, yes, yes. Not so much red in the currencies, though. The Australian dollar was up 0.3 of a cent to 70.1 US cents.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Great British Pound, we're up 0.7 of a pence to 56.39 pence. And against the euro, we're up 0.46 euro cents to 62.44 euro cents.
Okay.
So the Australian dollar's become a bit worth a bit more during the week. The All Ordinaries, the equity markets were generally down around the world. The All Ordinaries was down 41.8 points to 6,764. The S&P 500 was down 15.5 points to 2,984.42. And the UK FTSE Index was down 25.6 to 7,535. So most of the equity markets were down a bit during the week. Some stocks, that selected stocks.
Stocks people like locally.
BHP, $41.74, which was up 51 cents on the week. CBA was up 8 cents on the week to $81.32. NIB was down 18 cents to $7.81. And Telstra was down 11 cents to $3.79.
Okay, so,
bit of a mixed bag there.
Yeah.
The fuel price was down 2.8 cents a litre to $1.44.4, and in Sydney it was up 11 cents a litre to $1.40.1, so the prices are moving back together again.
Mm-hmm.
And the diesel fuel price in Newcastle is $1.48.4 and in Sydney $1.45.
Now, getting back to the currencies, wasn't there some talk at one stage, not all that long ago, about the Australian dollar dropping against the US dollar down to about 50 cents as a possibility?
Oh, there's always a possibility.
Okay, so speculation rules.
Speculation, anyone who can predict all this stuff is not telling you the truth.
Right, so
because if they could predict accurately the currency movements, they wouldn't be telling you. They'd be out making lots of money.
So much better, in fact, to predict in hindsight.
It's always easy to predict in hindsight. I've got it. Personally, I have a 100% success rate in predicting in hindsight.
Stephen Pritchard, then, every week, is Henry Jennings.
But
who
Henry
joins us now for our market update.
But Henry does actually sing in a band.
Well,
I do.
Yes,
I do.
I've seen it.
I actually sing in two bands.
Two? I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh, two
Henry.
Bands.
No.
There you go. It used to be three, now it's only two.
You didn't know that, did you, Jack?
There's a challenge.
You can find Henry singing on YouTube or Facebook or something.
Oh, so we might need to do that. We might
talented.
Yeah, we might need a demonstration one day.
You could do.
One day.
And So AMP's got a few problems again, I see.
AMP has nothing but problems, unfortunately. And the hope was, the great white hope was that they would be able to sell their life insurance business to some New Zealanders. And that $3 billion that was hopefully going to be coming from the sale to Resolution Life would be available to be reimbursed to shareholders. But it now looks like the RBNZ has put a bit of a kibosh on that. They've said that they need to ring-fence assets held in New Zealand, which is not really part of the current structure, and it doesn't expect that the RBNZ will approve the application. And as a result, it looks like the deal's off, and shareholders are pretty disappointed that they're not going to see some sort of capital return or some generosity from AMP. So the stock is now $1.77 cents, which is a long way down. That's down from $3.60 in a year. Mm. So there has not been a fun time for the venerable old Australian Mutual Providence Society.
Yeah, well, the interesting thing about, of course, this is that a number of shareholders were upset when AMP announced the sale of their life business.
Yeah,
and the share price
kind of
fell
both ways.
And now, well, actually, I was talking to one of those fund managers this week, and they're quite happy that it stopped being sold.
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, they're going to share in the upside if there is any, but certainly short term, it has not been good. And the poor old new CEO has really been dealt not a very good hand from the RBNZ. So, yeah, it still remains very much in the doghouse, this one.
And then their shopping malls. So they've had to write down the value of the shopping malls, which is interesting because it's not just an Australian phenomenon. This, I noticed also that Barney's, which is the upmarket department store in New York, is contemplating bankruptcy and blaming the high rents in shopping malls.
Yeah.
So it's not just here.
No, it's not just here. I think it's a global phenomenon, isn't it? Retail has been changing. People's, I think more to the point, it's not just the internet which is changing people's habits, but I think people are generally changing what they spend their money on, and we've seen that with the growth in travel and experiences as opposed to buying stuff and things. AMP just wrote down 10% of its value in one of its Brisbane malls, and they've got Western Australia, they're writing down some money in as well, so it's not particularly easy out there in retail land. I think you've really got to find a specialist niche, you know, it's having an effect. Foot traffic is not what it used to be in these big retail malls. So AMP, I think, is probably not of the calibre, shall we say, of Westfield, in terms of the ones that they have. And certainly, you know, we've seen a pretty good run this year in the Real Estate Investment Trust, but a lot of those superstars there have been predicated on logistics and warehousing as they satisfy the growing demand for stuff now. So, you know, you get your Amazon Prime Day and you want it in an hour. So,
Yeah,
that's so, done well for Goodmans, but not so well for others.
Yeah, and speaking of someone who's trying to change their mix, is Myer's going to increase sales by tapping in the demand for new gadgets such as electronic bikes, scooters, digital artworks, and novelty speakers.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, I have to say it's not the first place you think of when you want to buy yourself an electric bike.
No.
Is it? Pop into one of the four Myer stores that are doing it. They've got one in Melbourne, one in Sydney, and Brisbane and Chatswood, I think, is the one in Sydney where they're going to be doing it.
Oh.
Flagship stores. So they're going to be doing electric bikes, scooters. They've teamed up with a mob called Litmus Lab, and these guys showcase digital products to consumers. So you can even try before you buy. So you can pop down to the CBD or in Chatswood in Sydney and have a ride around in on your electric bike and see how much you can knock over when you're doing it.
Well, they're going to take us out for a test drive, or we've got to do it in the China section?
I don't know. Probably it'd be the bull in the China shop for me. It'd be a very expensive test ride, crashing into all sorts of things. wouldn't be good. Definitely not.
Doesn't sound like a good idea. So
no.
So then, and of course, AGL's now getting some pressure from some of the shareholders.
Yeah,
some of the shareholders are putting up resolutions at the AGM to close down the power plants, the coal-fired power plants.
Yeah, it never rains but it pours, does it? They get berated by the government for wanting to close them down and told they have to sell them off and all this, and they've embraced renewable energy more than probably most providers in Australia, and they're certainly heading down that way. And now you've got shareholders, of course, are looking at more, shall we say, more environmentally friendly policies, and some people now investing with that very much in mind, the ESG move with sort of those more responsible investing, and they're now being pressured to close down the coal plant. So there's a bit happening in coal, actually. The other day I read that BHP was looking at exiting its thermal coal business as well. So Rio's, of course, they've sold most of their coal assets. But so, you know, we've seen the big, a very contentious Adani move in Queensland to build a dirty, great big coal mine, while others are trying to sell them, get out of them, and make themselves more investor-friendly, I guess, for those investors that are looking for ethical investments. But AGL has been a kind of a political football in this, hasn't it, really?
They can't win either way.
It's, you know, it's been hard. It cost the last CEO, Andy Vesti. I wouldn't say cost his job, but he found it pretty hard going and ended up retreating to the sidelines and handing over to somebody else.
But he's still got a big payout.
Well, isn't that always the way, Stephen?
Yes.
You know how it works.
Yeah, I've got to get one.
You know exactly how it works.
Yeah.
The golden parachute.
Yes.
The share buybacks get your EPS up and therefore you get a bigger bonus. You know how it works.
And there's a bit of thing actually happening in the rural supplies industry. Ruralco's in the process of being taken over. And now Elders Gain acquire Australian independent rural retailers.
It's all happening, isn't it, in the rural space? And considering there's a massive drought still in place, it's interesting, isn't it, that Elders is moving to buy this AIRR. They're paying $186 million for the business. I think it's 150 odd in cash, and the rest of it is paying out the debt. And this is really to compete, as you say, with the move from a Canadian company called Nutrien to take over Ruralco. So it's the AIRR, they're a wholesale supplier of farm products and stuff like that. So the landscape is very much changing. And it's going to give Elders some more scale. The AIR guys have 240-odd independent farm stores across Australia, 100 Tucker's Pet and Produce stores. So, yeah, it's going to be a very concentrated landscape. But, of course, at the moment, the whole Ruralco thing has been put under a little bit of a spotlight, I think, by the ACCC, which have said they do have some concerns with the Ruralco takeover, but maybe this will help. If you've got two big players, then maybe this will help things along, but we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, the market certainly liked Elders, the deal. They raised some money, but the stock was up 16% yesterday, so they do clearly like the deal that they proposed, so some good news anyway.
Yeah, so then the other news, this interesting story is that even though Rio Tinto's reporting increased profits from the iron ore division, the volume sales are actually falling, and it's been because the price is going up is what's keeping their revenue up. So that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean the both BHP and Rio, it's hard to produce more dirt. They've even said that they've got major maintenance in the next 4 months, both Rio and BHP. They've also been hit with a number of weather events and production problems in terms of the iron ore mining. So it hasn't been plain sailing, but of course this all plays into the story that supply is hard to bring on tap that easily after the whole Vale dam tragedies that we've seen in Brazil. So with Brazil very much sort of clamped down on their production and BHP, Rio and Fortescue unable to ramp up, it's just meant that the price of iron ore has been stronger. So it's going to probably be stronger for longer, and although they won't get the production numbers as high as they probably would like, they're certainly going to get a very good price for the production that they do produce. So, it's pretty good for these guys, and you know they'd be making off like bandits. And we saw the production reports from both of them in the last couple of days. And you know you would imagine that when they bring out the financial reports in the weeks and months to come, they are going to be quite generous to shareholders in terms of dividends, cash management, and capital management initiatives. So it could be good for BHP and Rio shareholders, that's for sure.
And Oil Search, which is the PNG gas company, has cut their capital expenditure on the design and engineering of Workot's $20 billion expansion. So that doesn't sound like much when you say it quick, does it? $20 billion because of delays in finalised agreements with the PNG government?
It doesn't sound like much, does it? $20 billion, it just sort of slips off the tongue. But Oil Search, of course, they're the big player up there in PNG, along with some of the US guys as well. And they are, it's, I guess this is just a delay potentially to this expansion, because they have a new government in the PNG, or a new prime minister and a new minister as well. So there are some, I guess there's some pushback from the new kids on the block that maybe that PNG needs a better deal from some of these oil majors. And so there's a bit of wrangling going on, a bit of discussion and argy-bargy. So it is slowing down their decision on it, putting all that money into the LNG expansion up there in PNG.
Yes, and even though the market's an all-time high, some investment managers haven't had good results because the market's been quite difficult. Yeah. And Wilson Asset Management's funds have recorded their worst performance in a decade, and they've got a very good long track record here. So that was interesting, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a great long-term track record, and Jeff Wilson's done an extraordinary job. I guess the problem is, and Wilson's fall into this along with many other fund managers, is they're value fund managers, and they find it really hard to find value in this market. It has been the most, I've been around for quite some time, as Stephen.
We don't want to get into Henry.
No, but it's been a very reluctant bull market, if you like. We were down in the dumps at Christmas time, turned on a sixpence. See, that shows how old I am. Turned on a sixpence around Christmas Eve, and then we've just had the whole interest rate going down story that's driving equity markets. And it's been really difficult for fund managers looking for value. And Jeff, unfortunately, got quite bearish going into Christmas, was very heavily cashed up, missed a lot of the rally in January where things turned and didn't really see the change that had happened, and then was playing catch-up football in February, March and April, getting back to being fully invested, or at least relatively fully invested for him. So as a result, his performance has suffered, and of course Wilson Asset Management and some of his various other entities have traded at premiums to their NTA for some time, unlike other LICs. And we're seeing the rise of the ETFs, and now that sort of knocks into their market a little bit. People go to that rather than buying an LIC. So it's been a tough year for a number of fund managers, especially in the value space, as opposed to those that trade on momentum. Because you look at some of the valuations of some of our stocks, and ritzy is not the word for it. They are ritzy to the max, and they have gone very well, but a lot of the performance has been in things like the WiseTech, the Afterpays. I was just looking at the three stock picks that we put out in the small cap sector back at the beginning in December, actually almost at the bottom, and two of them have doubled in the last 6 months. So there you go, and one of them's gone nowhere. So it just shows you, and that was really, it was more lucky dip than anything else, just picking two that had some momentum. But it's been an interesting 6 months. A lot of reluctant bulls. I think everyone's been very keen to keep an eye on the exit while trying to participate as much as they can. But it's not been easy for the likes of Jeff and those value fund managers, I have to say.
Anyhow, that will turn around in due course.
Well, you would think so, but the world of investing is changing over the years, and the rise of ETFs has probably been part of that change. So, it's a tough world out there.
Yep.
At every now and again, I think we should have something on acronyms. We've been talking about LICs and ETFs.
LICs are listed
investment companies.
And ETFs are exchange traded funds.
Yes.
And there were a couple of other acronyms that made their way in.
I can't remember
that.
TINA and FOMO. The great thing about any profession is that they love having acronyms. It keeps everybody else out and keeps it just to the club.
Although things like FOMO have actually made the jump.
They've crossed over, haven't they?
Yes.
Life. Yes.
And TINA, there is no alternative.
Yes. Uh-huh. Oh, is there? I never heard
that's
that.
That's a
before,
nice one.
And then there's TRINA, which is there really is no alternative.
Sounds like a Henry Jennings invention today.
I've got to say, I think I did invent TRINA.
Yes.
Okay. Is it patented or can we use it?
We can use it.
No, go right ahead. The more the merrier.
Something we really don't want to talk about very much or put off as long as we can, I suppose, is estate planning. But it is something, isn't it, Stephen Pritchard, that's actually quite important?
Yeah, estate planning is becoming more and more important as people become more and more wealthy. I read somewhere the other day that the average household wealth in Australia now is now around $1 million, predominantly driven by property values, I'd imagine.
Because property values have been going up.
It's not unusual here to, to find houses in the suburbs now that are getting towards $1 million that what once would have been considered, plain, ordinary, middle-class houses are now
renovators' delight.
Punching windows, yeah. So the first thing you need to do about is preparing your will. So the first thing you need to think about is how you're going to dispose of the assets. Now, you want to keep your costs to lowest as you can, like everyone does. So you don't want to go into your local solicitor and then start talking to your husband and whoever else is there about how you're going to leave the assets. You need to have that all decided as much as you can before you go in there. I'm sure he's happy to sit there for 3 or 4 hours listening to you talk family issues, but bear in mind you're paying for all that and your time would be a lot better spent just getting him to draft the stuff up that you've decided and get his advice on how to affect it. So what you need to do is think about, how you're going to leave the assets and bear in mind that superannuation usually doesn't form part of the estate, so you can deal with that with binding death benefit nominations into the super fund. And there's a number of tax-driven reasons why you wouldn't want it to actually form part of the estate, so you probably need to get a bit of advice on that. And one of the other things you need to think about is the capital gains implications of when you leave the assets. So an example of this could be that you've got two houses and you've got two children. One of the houses is your main residence, so that's going to be exempt from capital gains tax, and the other house is some holiday house. For example, you've had it at Nelson Bay, which isn't uncommon, for a number of for 20 or 30 years, and you think, oh, well, they're both worth the same. The principal race residence is worth $1 million and the holiday house is worth $1 million. What we'll do is we'll leave one to each child because we're treating them equally. Well, that's what it appears to be on the surface, but the fact is that there's a capital gains tax liability attached to the holiday house, so that the children could lose, the child who gets the holiday house could lose $300,000 or $400,000 in value there if that asset was sold and the capital gains tax needed to be paid. So
how would you get around that?
You've got to work out the numbers and adjust the estate values. I mean, if there's other assets in the estate, it's relatively easy. Probably need to sit down and have a talk to the children. Or you might not be able to get around it, but you need to be aware of it, You need to be aware of it. One child might particularly want the other holiday house and the other one doesn't care, and it might be the fact that they're going to keep the holiday house themselves for, another 20 or 30 years, and it might be, well, they're prepared to just wear the carry forward capital gains tax liability. So there's issues that, first of all, you've got to become aware of them, and then you have to think of a solution. And the important thing is to become aware of them. And it's the same with share portfolios. I mean, even though it's very rare, but there are still people around who've got pre-1985 shares. And the cost base on those resets, and there's other shares that are acquired after 1985 got capital gains tax issues. So you need to basically, if you've got a reasonably sized estate, it's not only the lawyer, you should get your accountant involved to work out the tax issues and get some advice on the tax issues.
Okay.
And of course, the more children and the more assets you've got, the more complex things can become.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the more scope for arguments and dissension there is.
Yes. So you do want to make it as simple as you can so that people don't...
Well, you want to make it as simple as you can, but sometimes some things can't.
Can't be simplified.
Okay. It all depends on there's all sorts of things that will make it complicated. So, for example, Your children, you've got a couple of children, some of which have, or one of which has remarried and has got children by the, your grandchildren are with the first partner and the second partners, and you want to make sure that your assets end up in the hands of the grandchildren. And so, you know, all these things create complications. And you need to think about what, realistically, what you need to think about is what the end result you want to achieve and work backwards from there.
Okay, yeah. You need advice, that's...
Yeah, need advice, and the bigger the state. Yeah. And a state over $1 million isn't unusual these days. And, you know, throw a bit of super in there. I mean, the average superannuation balance is only about 300, but, you know, throw a bit of super in there. You're up to 1.3 million.
It all adds up.
Yes. And one of the other things is you need to think about why you're part of estate planning is you need to probably appoint a guardian while you're alive. So if something happens to you, someone can make decisions in regarding your health and your health care and things like that. And of course, there's the old thing is the power of attorney. Power attorneys are quite useful. You know, even when you go overseas, something might have to be done at home. It's good to have some trusted person holding the power of attorney. Now, if you're not sure keen on that, you can restrict the power of attorney in various ways. You can make it that two people have to act before it's got effect. So once again, you need to think about who you want to have as your power of attorney and what processes you want them to go through. I mean, it can be as simple as we're going overseas for 3 months, so we need someone to pay the council rates and the electricity bill and the dog's bill at the vet or whatever. And to do that, you need to get a power of attorney in place. Mm. Unless, of course, the poor dog's going to starve or something. Yeah. So you need to think about all these things. While you're doing estate planning, it's just not about when you pass away. It's about managing your estate until you get to that stage and about looking after the family. And one of the things that's very popular, particularly these days, is when you've got these large estates and you want to potentially look after some grandchildren, is setting up a testamentary trust in your will. And basically that means that the money's held on trust for your ultimate beneficiaries. Now, it's not uncommon that in some cases, I mean, we've got a couple in the firm where the income of the trust is going to the children and ultimately the capital is to go to the grandchildren. Now, that's not an unusual setup, but that needs to be properly drafted and properly set up. And it's probably a bit of an expense to run, so you wouldn't do something like that for, $50,000, for example.
Yes.
Right. But if you've got a significant estate that you want to preserve, various assets or family businesses or something, a testamentary trust is another way you can approach that.
Okay. And I suppose you need to appoint an executor.
Executor, yes. Now, executors are interesting. It depends on what you want to end up and how complex the will is. You can have all sorts of problems with executors. First of all, you need to ask them if they're willing to be the executor.
Yes.
And then probably you need to tell them what you're actually planning on, whereas someone might be the executor just to, you know, sell the family home and distribute the money. They probably don't want to be the executor for a long-going trust arrangement to benefit your grandchildren. So you need to ask them and you need to speak to them in advance.
Well, there's lots to think about. And that is Thursday.
We've run out of time, Jane.
Finance for today. Thank you, Stephen Pritchard.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care, finance, business and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.